evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk, your host, and I'm very happy tonight to be talking to two editors and a contributor to a new book of essays about the meaning of sport in its broader societal context called A Locker Room of Her Own, Celebrity, Sexuality, and Female Athletes. Dr. David C. Ogden is Associate Professor in the Department of Communications at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and Dr. Joel Nathan Rosen is Associate Professor of Sociology at Moravian College, and they are co-editors of A Locker Room of Her Own, as well as the first two books in this series. Dr. Martha Reed teaches literature at Moravian College, and she is one of the contributors to this book. So, professors, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. I'd like to ask David and Joel Nathan first about the genesis of this book. You already edited two that dealt with sports figures. Why did you think you needed to do this book?
Wow. Dave, you want me to tackle that? Or you?
Yeah, go for it.
We like to refer to this as the mini muffin that was heard around the world. Dave and I actually met almost by accident. We were sitting across each other at the Giamatti Library at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And we just got to chit-chatting over a cup of coffee and a couple of mini muffins, and next thing you know, I had done this piece on Jackie Robinson. I was kind of looking for a way to expand it, and I had mentioned to Dave what I had done, and he says, you know, I've always wanted to do that with Roberto Clemente. And within 30 minutes, we had mapped out not only a book that would incorporate both the Robinson and Clemente stories, mm-hmm. but a five-volume anthology series on sport and reputation. It happened really quickly, and then it took us a couple months to get Mississippi on board, University Press in Mississippi on board, and the rest, as they say, is history.
So the first two books dealt with what specifically?
The first two books looked at reverse. They were sort of mirror images of each other. The first book looked at specifically at issues pertaining to race and masculinity. On a trajectory in which male athletes who were vilified during their careers
found, for something outside of the sports arena.
Well, mostly because of just who they were. Because as Bob Rising in his wonderful essay on Jim Thorpe notes, that Thorpe represented everything, the entire embodiment of the American dream and the YMCA related, you know, trinity of mind, body, spirit, except you looked at him and you realize he represented everything except the visual. And mm-hmm. so we looked at athletes who were vilified because of who they were in a world that wasn't ready for them, who found solace and comfort later in life. They were lionized later in life. Mm-hmm. And so Robinson and Clemente certainly fit that bill. Mm-hmm. And we used Dave and I used Muhammad Ali as sort of the iconic figure for that trajectory. We wrote about him in brief in our introduction, mm-hmm. and then the second book took the opposite tack. We looked at folks who were beloved during their playing careers who fell out of favor, and obviously O.J. Simpson factored into our introduction of that
yes,
book there.
Yes, I would imagine. And so then you found that there was a lack of female athletes in these first two books that had to be addressed separately. Their issues were different.
Well, this is and Dave, please chime in on this. This was the $64,000 question for us, because as we were writing book two, Marion Jones' situation happened. And it was about that time too that Cheryl Swoops had made her announcement that she was coming out, and there was all sorts of things going on. And Dave and I were in the middle of putting this book together, and it dawns on us that we're sort of at a crossroads here. We have athletes who are falling from grace, which was the working title of book two, mm-hmm. but there was always the problem of if we put Marion Jones in that book two. Would we have lost? Would we have buried the lead? Would we have? And would the issue of gender, which was very much a part of the Marion Jones story, how much would that have been sort of cordoned off to the side mm-hmm. in this particular book? And so we had always talked about a third book specifically of women.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about reputation and the female athlete, and I think I want to address this to Martha as the staff member of the group here. Do you think women athletes have different problems with reputation than men? I mean, I keep thinking men get in trouble with the law with being overly aggressive with women. I'm thinking of like Mike Tyson and rape, and even some college men that we hear about who have been overly aggressive. Do you think that women have different problems with women athletes have different problems with their reputation?
Absolutely, and I think that the Billie Jean King story and the you say you're going to do a circus book at the end, the circus fight she had with Bobby Riggs, which was a wonderful show.
Tell listeners who may not have been around at that time what that's about.
Well, she was this international tennis star, and Bobby Riggs was a wonderful tennis player, but long past his prime. And he was a showman, and he boasted that he could beat a younger woman at her peak, that a man could always beat a woman. Mm-hmm. And of course, she whooped him pretty good. Yeah. And I don't know whether that was a script or, you know, probably she could just whip him pretty good. He was not a bad tennis player, even mm-hmm. as an older man. But it was a great show. But I think it epitomizes the idea that women athletes are, oh, kind of quaint, kind of interesting. Oh, women can get out there and do this physical stuff. But they haven't been taken seriously, mm-hmm. Perhaps until the 21st century. And the person that I wrote about, Babe Dixon Zaharias, mm-hmm. In through the 20th century, that was one thing that she was fighting, a woman being taken seriously as a physical titan.
As a physical titan. Yeah, but that's one of the questions that I had as I was reading this book is, okay, there's female athletes and they're great in their own thing, but would they ever really be as interesting without the sideshow of there being female as men athletes? Because males will always have the better stats. They're the ones who are always worth going to look at. They hit the ball out of the park, so to speak.
One thing that Babe often did, she hit the ball from the men's tee and could hit it farther, although perhaps not as far as she sometimes boasted that she could hit a ball, but mm-hmm. who could in golf?
Yeah, that was your chapter you wrote on Babe Dedrickson Zaharias. Is that how you say her name?
Zaharias, yeah.
Okay, and who was she? What was?
She was the AP Woman Athlete of the Century. Mm-hmm. The AP voted her Athlete of the Half Century in when she was still alive, still playing. And then 50 years later, they voted her the Woman Athlete of the 20th Century. Her lifespan was across the first half of the century, but she remains a legend, mostly for golf, although she excelled in every sport, started out in track and field, and segued through a number of baseball, and she felt that she could play anything and win at it and beat anybody.
And so what was her – she was voted the AP Athlete of the Century. That's the Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
So why did they vote her? That was it based on her stats or on the attention that she brought to her sports?
Both.
Both.
She won all the great golf matches, and she is probably best known now for her golf achievements. Towards the end of her life, she was diagnosed with colon cancer. And underwent surgery, and a year later won the U.S. Open. And so she kind of epitomizes the competitive spirit.
Mm-hmm. How did you get interested in her? Are you a golfer?
and Martha's chapter is just a great way to start the book. I mean, it really sets the stage for the other chapters, and I think Martha and Joel have hit it on the head too. That you know, these women really had two strikes against them, or several of them did. For Venus Williams and Marion Jones, they had, you know, not only were they female, but they were females of color. Mm-hmm. And they had that extra obstacle to get over. And I think that even though these women face similar challenges, they're all very different stories based on the cultural and the social forces that they faced in entering what was up to that point a man's domain. And in many ways, despite the years and years of Title IX, remains that.
So you're talking about reputation, and Babe was really the person who, in bringing attention to the sports and opening up doors, and wasn't Babe like the mistress of self-invention and reinvention?
Reinvention. She was very good at it. Not the only one, perhaps, but she was very good at it. She was also serious about not only probably to further her own career first and foremost, but she was one of the founders and really the one centrally responsible for the establishment of the Ladies Professional Golf Association. Mm-hmm. You know, when you asked me how I got interested in her and write about her, Joel Nathan and I joke about it because he thinks that I'm the one that suggested it, and I think that I was going to write about Billie Jean King, and then all of a sudden I'm writing about Babe, and I didn't think it was ever going to happen anyway, because he asked me way back when he was working on book number one, and I thought, oh, I'll be dead before he gets to book number three, mm-hmm. but I wasn't, and he tells me I'm writing about Babe, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't know whether I want to write about... I knew about her. I'm not a sports fan, and I'm not a sociologist, mm-hmm. and I don't know how I got into this, except that it's really hard to say no to Joel Nathan.
Mm-hmm. And apparently, he got quite a few people
yeah,
in his project.
He's a persuasive kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But as the rubber started to hit the road, and I was going to have to write this thing back in the summer of 2009. I thought, oh, I don't know. And I was the Women's U.S. Open was held at Saugan Valley Country Club here
that's
in the Lehigh
right,
Valley
right.
that year. So I'm not a sports fan, but I like golf, and it's Saugan Valley Country Club. So I
so
went.
You went, and you got interested.
And I'm thinking, oh, Babe Diedrichsen. And I walk in, and the first thing that smacks me in the face is this huge, greater than life size photograph, stood up as a cardboard cutout kind of thing, of Babe Diedrichsen Zaharias. And I thought, oh, this is meant to be. This is absolutely meant to be. And then talk to the people at the golf museum, the PGA Golf Museum, and they go, oh, yeah, we have tons of stuff about her.
So you had a lot of stuff. Okay, this is a good time to take a break. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We'll be right back.
For program support, we thank Jenny Squali, 102 East 4th Street, Bethlehem, serving homemade Malaysian cuisine infused with spices and combined with other ingredients to reflect the various cultures in Malaysia. All food is made fresh. For hours, daily specials, and more information, 610-758-8088 or jennysquali.com.
Join us for Winter Blast 2014. WDIY's annual party is happening Saturday, February 1st at Miller Symphony Hall in Allentown. Tickets are available at wdiy.org. Winter Blast tickets include complimentary food, drinks, and the live rockin' sounds of the Doughboys. Go to wdiy.org and get your tickets today.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're talking to Drs. Ogden, Rosen, and Reed about their new book, A Locker Room of Her Own, Celebrity, Sexuality, and the Female Athlete. So I'm just going to throw this one out to all three of you. Throughout the book, there's an almost unspoken implication that the achievement of female athletes should be considered as important as the achievement of male athletes. And the authors allude to the similarity between sex and race. But while you can say there's no difference, and we talked about this a little bit before, while you can say there's no difference between an Asian, black, or white female athlete, don't you think there's a definite difference between men and women athletes? And that men will always have the showier statistics. I mean, there's this kind of underlying theme in the book that the population and the press doesn't pay as much attention to female athletes.
Dave, you want to take this?
Yeah. Jumping off from my earlier comment, you know, we, despite the years of Title IX, despite the sexual revolution, women's rights, et cetera, we oftentimes, and it's still, and sports still exemplifies this, women are treated as second-class citizens sometimes. I mean, Michael Messner has done some great work on that, and I don't think it's as blatant as when he was doing a lot of his work on gender-related differences in sports. But you know, when you see pink graphics for a female basketball game and regular graphics for a male basketball game, it shows that we haven't come as far as I think sometimes we should. And there, you can still find gender-related learning theories anchored in our approach to sports, in society's approach to sports, and a number of other things. So these women were in their own right, and I think it's a point we make too in the book. Often, in their own right, were superstars, even compared with men. And if you consider endurance sports, women oftentimes are as capable as men, sometimes better at endurance sports. You know, women have climbed Mount Everest too, not just men.
Right. And the swimmer that just swam,
Diane Nyhan.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. I blanked out on her name.
And Dave, it was funny because you were mentioning the graphics issue. We had this problem with the cover of the book. The first iteration of the cover, the color was more violet, and she was quite the buxom looking woman. And we had to tell the publisher, look, first of all, you gotta let's darken the cover, let's not make it so dainty looking, and let's take a few inches, you know, off her curves somewhere, because she was more of a sex object than she was an athletic figure. So, you know, you mentioned anything having to do with gender in the sport world, and suddenly here comes the girly stuff, the girly colors and imagery.
But doesn't I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. Doesn't sex sell? I mean, Danica Patrick is like the perfect example of that. She put on her tutu or whatever and posed for some pictures.
Absolutely.
And
FloJo before
FloJo,
her.
Yeah.
You know, and both of those chapters in this anthology deal with that in pretty graphic details in some ways, and especially with the Patrick essay by Lisa Nielsen, who looks at the women racers who came before her, and many of whom they're sort of ambivalent about what Danica Patrick has come to represent. But they're also at the same time going, wow, if I had that card to play back in the 70s and 80s when I was coming of age in the sport, I probably would have played it too. So I think that's sort of in some ways, Danica Patrick is both a positive as well as a negative in terms of women, because I think what we're talking about here is taking women athletes seriously.
Well, yes, and I guess maybe that's the point that I would like to just argue a little bit. I mean, sports is kind of entertainment above all. I mean, it's not one of the crucial – I'm talking to a bunch of sociologists here, so I'm treading on dangerous ground. But, I mean, it's not like they're farmers or they're doing something that that the world needs. They're doing self-fulfillment. They're doing artistic things in a way. So they have to be as flashy and as beautiful and as eye-catching as they can, don't you think, to get the audience, which they need to support them in their corner.
In a sense, but that's a similar argument to, you know, why are we going into space? You know, I mean, on the surface, these things are superfluous, but we still talk about, you know, Greco-Roman athletes and the sort of gladiators of that period too. Yes, it is. Sport is superfluous, and yes, there's a reason that in Dave's world of journalism, sport was always called the sports section was referred to as the toy department. You know, it's not earth shattering, except when you look up some of the most iconic moments in history have been sport related. Smith and Carlos in Mexico City, the Boston Marathon this past year. the earthquake in San Francisco during the World Series. And you can't get away from it. And while, yes, and this is precisely the point that Roberta Newman and I make in our chapter about Marion Jones and why Marion Jones was such a difficult choice for Dave and I to make as to which book in which book she'd appear. The thing with Marion Jones was she was the best player in the B circuit. I mean, the women athletes are always relegated to the B circuit. You know, Serena Williams is great, but you know, you throw that conjunction in, and suddenly she's not that great. There's the issue of legitimacy. Marion Jones was able to accomplish something that nobody thought possible, because it wasn't that she was the greatest runner, period. It's that she oftentimes now gets mentioned at the same time as Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire. You go Bonds, McGwire, Clemens, Jones. Wait a minute. She found equality by being one of sport's great outlaws. So women have to find the back door into the limelight. I don't think women, at least not in my lifetime, I don't see women sports exploding onto the scene the way things have in the last 20 years of sports broadcasting. But as far as what they're able to accomplish, the fact that they are accomplishing great things in spite of you know, whether it's Babe Didrikson's generation, which said, you know, great women athletes obviously have to be sexual deviants of some sort, or they're not really women, or the old ridiculous adage that physiologically women who participated in sport would never be able to reproduce, which was something that Babe herself actually bought into. She believed the reason she never had a child was because she ruined her reproductive system. I mean, these are some of the many things that go on with women athletes. So we go from access to sport, which is what Title IX gives us, to, okay, so where are women athletes today?
Mm. But back to your characterization of sports as being entertainment and somewhat of lesser importance, I think that through sports, a very serious question, and that's pay equity, has been addressed and to some extent corrected through the publicity of sports. That, you know, for how long have we talked about women earning 75 cents on the dollar, mm-hmm. Compared to men generally? But that issue is one that the women in sports have organized, the golf LPGA or in tennis. Billie Jean King has been a leader of that they get prize money that's equitable to the kind of prize mm-hmm. money that men get. And that publicizes the issue and has
general,
a spillover
yes. mm-hmm.
then into
right.
society generally.
Right. That kind of leads into my next question here. The title of the book is very evocative, actually. A Locker Room of Her Own alludes, of course, to Virginia Woolf's dictum that to write fiction, a woman needs funds in a room of her own. So do you think that any advances or any accomplishments that women athletes make will spill over into other things, like us poor fiction writers, for example?
Well, I can jump in here really quick. When you read the chapter in our book about Roberta Gibb and Catherine Switzer, the first two women to run the Boston Marathon, or at least to interject themselves in the Boston Marathon, I mean, women weren't, number one, supposed to run. It could physically harm them. At least that's what Jacques Semple and some of the others with the Boston Marathon thought, much less run 26 miles. But you look at the state of women's running today, and in college, women are still treated like that to a sense. I mean, men's cross country, they run 8,000-10,000 meters. Women's cross country, that's 5,000 meters. And so even there, the discrepancy in distance between men and women, when women are tremendous endurance athletes, but you still have that concept that was used by the organizers of the Boston Marathon to keep runners out. You still see shades of that, mm-hmm. just in the discrepancy in the distances that the genders compete.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that this is basically like breaking down all the barriers everywhere. So if women can run like men, well, maybe they can run a corporation like a man. Is that what?
Well, exactly. I mean, In terms of race and gender studies, I mean, the way this works is they're called lifelines. If you see somebody who looks like you or who represents the same things you do doing something that you have been told historically you're not allowed to do, suddenly you have a lifeline, okay? And this is
And what female athletes
represent, first of all, they had no lifelines until 72. They had almost no lifelines. 72 comes Title IX. Here come the lifelines. And by the time we reach the 21st century, now you have, I mean, people, who doesn't know Danica Patrick? You don't I don't like racing. I'm not a big racing fan, but I mean, Danica Patrick is pretty ubiquitous.
She's on your scope, yeah.
She's on everybody's scope. And to an extent, Marion Jones, you know, her foul-ups, I mean, she's a great start of her career, but her foul-ups made her, you know, this infamy does translate into, you know, some sort of publicity. And the arcs of the reputations, going back to our original point, the arcs of our reputation are very well demonstrated in these individual women. I think there's no way of creating a trajectory like we do in books one and two, because female athletes are completely different from the other athletes we have chronicled so far.
And what's next then, real quickly, we have about
What's next is, and unfortunately I'll be doing this with another editor because Dave has had to end his association, although we're trying to find a senior place for him. Maureen Smith and I out in California, we're doing a book now, we're halfway through it, on looking at the reputational arcs and maintenance of reputations in international athletes who have virtually no North American reputations.
Oh, very cool.
So, but some crossover, Yao Ming, but we have surfers and sumo wrestlers and Formula One people, distance runners, football. The working title is More Than Cricket and Football.
Okay, great. This is right great. Now. Okay, we're running out of a little time here, so we'd like to thank our learned professors, Joel Nathan Rosen, David Ogden, and Martha Reed, for talking about their new book, A Locker Room of Her Own, Celebrity, Sexuality, and Female Athletes. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk.